When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
Just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Lord, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas with us this morning. SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 87. So we have both of your two buddies, Matt Byrne and Ricardo, are off to Vegas. And neither one of them, I think, has ever gambled in their life. I don't think they've ever been there before they were 21. What do you think's going down out there?
Nothing good.
These guys are pretty straight.
Sin City.
That's the truth. They, for those that don't know, Matt Byrne and Ricardo both work for a, is it a college station, Greg? Or is it, I think it is, up on the north side, right? And they won some kind of an award, and they went out to Vegas to be part of the group and receive their award and stuff. Good for them.
They deserve it.
Yeah, they deserve it. So what award are we getting?
We're getting the more cash for PTI award.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of on that note. What do you make of this weekend? Just from a totally, we're going to have Mike on later to talk about all the military, he and John, and all the other sorts of things that went on this weekend. Kind of crazy stuff. What transpired last week, you think, in terms of the market and the VIX and a lot of the stuff that you're putting together on that and your trader's advice thing, which is not going to give advice, but it's just going to take you to the next step. If you say, I like this stock, I want to be bullish, I want to be bearish, it just gives you a bunch of different ways to do it, right?
Right, and, next step.
And it tells you, you know, the kind of the pluses and minuses of each, which is really pretty impressive when I think of it. I mean, obviously, I always thought that that what you want to do is have somebody you can talk to about that, meaning like a broker like me or my brother or somebody. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people like to do it.
This is the step in between.
It's a step in between, yeah.
So you want to do more on your own, you're looking at it, and after you got a few ideas, that's the point at which you bounce them off a broker or you watch to see what happens. And then start executing. But it's the step in between you and a broker, in that you build more experience in the mindset, more like it's more tactical rather than it's just the next step into becoming a better trader.
It's not going to tell you, you know, buy Northern Tissue. It's not going to do that. The idea is
You've got a position, or you have an idea that you want to put on, and this kind of tells you a good way to go about it. So,
right. So, what do you make of last week? We had CPI came out on Wednesday, right? So Wednesday comes out with pretty much a horrible number. Even if you look at the unadjusted, it was even more horrible. The adjusted, for those that don't know, came out 0.4 for the month. You know, the year-over-year stuff, we really don't care what happened a year ago, right? We want to know what's going on now. So the adjusted month-to-month was 0.4. Okay, so times 12, not to mention last month was 0.4 as well. So times 6 for the 0.8 gets you at 4.8. Light years from even using their own numbers from the Fed's 2%, which he talks about in time. Well, in time, we're all dead. I mean, you know, time, what does time mean? The unadjusted 2 months in a row, makes you wonder how they're adjusting it, is 0.6. Okay, so so now you add, you know, 12 times 0.6 is 7.2. That's even worse. So then the market is down a boatload. The next day, the CPI or PPI comes out with a relieving number, and yet our professor Hal Snar sent some stuff around, Greg, that basically said if you took the price of gasoline, which they had down on the month somehow in there, if you took that out of there, that number was horrible as well. Yet the market took it to mean it was great. So we're actually up Thursday more than we were down on Wednesday. And you're thinking there, okay, you had these two numbers together. There's no way in hell that you were going to have the total message was positive. Yet the market's up, right, because we're the buy-to-dip mentality. So then on Friday, the rumor flies, when it turned out to not be a rumor, that Iran is going to attack Israel. Now, of course, there's other stuff going on, too, so you can't just point at one piece. Although I would say that was, I don't normally, after saying you shouldn't do it, I'm going to do it. Normally, the market, Greg, the market goes wherever it wants, but the spike in the VIX on Friday, which was about 3.5 points, which is the volatility, essentially the price of insurance.
Yeah, that means people are a little spooked.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you would say it's fair to say that the price, at least the price up in the VIX, had to do with the impending.
They didn't
want
to be sitting on the weekend with a bunch of risk, so they paid up for the insurance. Call it, they paid up for the downside.
And so Friday we had the S&P's down 75 and the Nasdaq down 267, which puts us, I think, pretty solidly down in a week, right?
Right.
So there you go. You've got all that. Plus, Friday had an incredible turnaround in gold. When we were doing the show, gold was up $60 and ended up down on the day. I don't know where that came from, because the rest of the market, the morning, gold was way up, oil was way up, the market was way down. Right. The market stayed down, oil sort of stayed up, and gold turned totally around, which, you know, I don't know where that came from, but, you know, they're not asking us. So what do you make of all this? I mean, I think, and I've been talking for a while, that the rates in the market, you know, I'm not going to go back to my last week's story about 1980-81, but this is sort of have to, there's been a tone change here, Greg. You know, whether or not it's a couple of months and then we're off to the races again or something, you know, I don't know. But
there's a lot to do with, I think, real interest rates rather than just regular interest rates. That people really are trying to get a feel for what the inflation rate is going to be, and they're not quite sure, and they want to get a solid premium for whatever is, call it, locked up in bonds. And if you've got inflation that might be 2 or might be 4
or 5
or 5 6. Or 6 or yeah, so they're trying to figure that out. And I really think that you're seeing that swing the market more so than earnings.
Well, I think so too. And plus the earnings going forward, I don't, you know,
this week actually could be interesting. I think.
Oh yeah. Well, J.P. Morgan's earnings were lousy on Friday, so that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, and you got more of the regionals this week too, so it should be interesting to see something like what was it? The Citizens, I think, is this week, and what was it?
Was it like a Fifth? There's a million of them. All these regionals.
It wasn't. There was.
They're still not marking their 10-year bonds and stuff.
Key Corp is Thursday, but that wasn't the one I was thinking of. Oh man, Wintrust is yeah. There's U.S. Bank, Wintrust, and Citizens. You know, Wednesday, Thursday. It should be interesting to see how those guys have either offloaded some of their risk or they continue to have that duration risk. Hancock Whitney also on that's on Tuesday. Yeah. So it should be interesting to see kind of where they line up versus expectations, because Ooh, Monday, M&T. So, yeah, you get the idea that who's losing money. So if you're not meeting expectations, they're not going to be kind to those guys.
Greg, what do you make of, you say the market's irrational. I think at the end of the day,
label it rational or irrational is an exercise in futility. It's going to do something.
Well, I think on a day-to-day basis, you don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, if you do, you think, whatever. If you do, I got a bridge for you.
If you do, you're either really rich or kind of delusional.
Yeah, I think there are some things that, at the end of the day, even though people have, what did Greenspan say, irrational exuberance, and you have people like get locked in their stuff. I watched Kramer. I was heading over to see you guys. It was on Thursday night or whatever, or when it was Wednesday night, and Nvidia just taking a big hit, and he's talking about people just don't trust the chairman. He's the best guy since, Jesus Christ, for God's sake, and these guys, you just got to believe. Okay, I don't AI, the chips and stuff. It seems like they've got an inroad there. I don't know that much about it. They've got an advantage for a while. Who knows how long? It's not forever, because I've seen a lot of things forever that didn't last forever, right? But the bottom line is, somehow or another, you rationalize income going forward, and your pricing models from 100 years ago are still the pricing models. I mean, if you ask somebody,
which model?
Well, I'm saying, the idea that
price to earnings.
No, I'm saying if you tell me, gee, Chief, I got this 8-flat for you, and it makes $200,000 a year, and by the way, it's and all the maintenance is up to date, and I've got a little nest egg for in case we need a new roof 5 years from now, but it makes stone cold $200,000 a year, and I'm going to say, okay,
after expenses,
yeah,
wow,
but I'm going to say, whatever, pick a number, pick $100,000, easier to do the. And I'm going to say, okay, I need a return of, if I'm going to go borrow money from this for this place, I'm going to have to go borrow money at 10%. All right, well, that's so okay. Now what? I need $2 million is my number. That's a break even, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's $200,000 a year, so I mean, do the math. If my interest rate, if I go find interest for 2%, I can pay you a lot more, right? And still make a profit.
Well, that's kind of what happened for when those interest rates dropped,
yeah,
and prices went higher. And then
that's right. So I mean, it's at the end of the day, not tomorrow, not that place. If it's all of a sudden it's a neighborhood that's up and coming, it's going to be more. If it's down and going, it's going to be less. There's all kinds of things that affect the heist. But at the end of the day, it comes down to how much are you going to make for me over a certain period of time? How certain is the return? And by the way, what's the interest rate? Okay, what rate am I looking to get? If I can borrow at 8, I'm going to want to return at 12, right? Or something along those lines. There's something I need, because it's what I used to do all day for Pullman places. What projects do we want to take in?
Yeah, and the fact that people have different risk tolerances and timelines makes them...
Well, it also have different costs of capital. But the bottom line is, the other thing is that a particular formula that has not worked in a long time, in my estimation, is the rate of interest. The nominal rate of interest is the real rate of interest. In other words, there needs to be some money. If you lend me, $1 million to build a hot dog stand, okay, you could be getting 5% in the bank, or for a while you're getting nothing in the bank, but for I need to pay you something to use your money, right? And money is a factor of production. What do I need for the hot dog stand? This is as simple as it can get. What do I need, Greg? You know about the restaurant business. Well, gee, you need a hot dog cooker. By the way, you probably need a foundation. You probably need a few walls. You might need a heater. You might need an air conditioner. You need all that stuff. Plus, I don't have the $1 million. I need the $1 million. It's a factor of production, just like the concrete, just like the stove. And so I'm paying for all the rest of the stuff. Why should I be getting that for free from you? I shouldn't. I should have to pay you. And then the number on that through the centuries is 2.5, 2.25, 3%, somewhere in there. Someplace, somewhere, some Stone Age dude borrowed 100 stones from a guy to build a house, and the next year he brought him 103 back. That's been a constant, except for the last few years, through the centuries. All right, then I'm going to say, well, gee, it looks to me like the dollar, or whatever I'm loaning you money in, is dropping in price. And so if I loan you $1 million...
Well, dollar hasn't been dropping. But.
Okay, but I'm saying it drops. So here's the biggest, I think, Greg, and I hopefully one of these days you'll believe me. The biggest misnomer that people talk about inflation and the value of the dollar, it's not about the value to the euro or the value to the yen. It's the value to your car. It's the value to the baseball card. It's the value to the building. So if everybody in the world were to double the amount of currency in circulation, the dollar versus yen, the dollar versus euro, the dollar versus pound would not change, would it? Yet the dollar versus a TV sure as hell would. The TV would now be twice the price, right?
Yeah, the inflation is the tax for everybody.
Yeah.
Meaning?
Except the government.
You got to...
It's good for them.
They can't manage that either. They're still in the red.
They know that you're going to be paying... If you lent them money 3 years ago, say 5 years at 1.5%, they know they're giving you money back at the end of 5 years. It's worth way less than the money you gave them.
And that's part of the deal.
Yeah, well, that's
what they have to
that's
do
great.
In order to stay in business.
Well, after mismanagement, yes.
And with this, call it, I don't know, what's the deficit now?
32? You're not going to force me to look, are you?
No. But the deficit is getting bigger, meaning the cost of capital for the U.S. to operate is going higher. And as the interest that the government is paying on, what's it called? I don't know.
Risk-free
30-some rate? Trillion.
Yeah.
Is going higher and higher as a percentage of the expenditures for... And you got to wonder, how do you pay that back? Well, part of it is you're inflating a lot of it. So that's just built into the system, like it or not. The incentive for the government is to depreciate more and accelerate the depreciation, because how do you... If you have to spend half your income on debt service, you're going to want to...
But that's a zero-sum game, because... What you're doing is stealing money from your population, and you do reach the point where you can't. As the Irish say, "Well, I don't know what the Greeks say. What's the equivalent of this in Greekdom?" The Irish say, "You can't get blood out of a turnip."
It doesn't matter what you know what it is. It's the incentives are crystal clear in that there's only a few ways to get rid of that. You got to pay it off, and or you have to inflate it away. And they're sure is not. They're definitely not paying it off.
Well, you know, so there's some truth to the. Well, I don't know if it's new, but there's some truth to the new deficit financing world, where, and I actually agree with this. I just don't agree with the part that you can believe any of your politicians to tell you.
You don't even need to listen to them. You just need to know their options.
Okay, but
and the path of least resistance for them is, you know what? Maybe a little inflation is good for us because we owe a lot of money and. And this is how it can benefit. You and expect to see it more and more in the news, because that's the way they have to spin it in order to keep operating.
But there's limits to everything, right? There's limits to everything. I wish I would have taped. Well, nobody had the mechanism to do it in those days. I wish I would have taped some of Milton Friedman's classes, because he taught a class. That nobody wanted to learn, and he didn't even really want to teach. it was the theory of price, and it was a manuscript. He never actually finished the textbook.
Need to take the class. I mean, this is Econ 101.
Well,
there's,
not really.
There's only.
But he would say stuff like, "The problem with inflation, why you can't let it start up, is when it first starts up, it feels so good for everybody."
Yeah, maybe.
But then you get a little harder, a little harder, a little harder, and all of a sudden you can't deal with it. I mean, at some point, you know, the greatest, well, I'll go through the story again, but the greatest example of inflation where the government declared it to work was the Weimar Republic. they essentially buried their citizenry to redo their deal with the Britain and France regarding their World War I reparations. So they told France and Britain they couldn't pay it. It was too much money. And they said, screw you, you got to pay it. So they inflated their currency. They started to inflate it. I don't think they had any idea how much it was going to get out of control, to the point where if you were paying people at the restaurant, you had to pay them at 11 o'clock so they could do their shopping at lunch because the prices were higher after the end of the day.
I mean, yes, but they, and sorry to insult the UFC, but you know, there's a lot of academic theory in Friedman Doctrine and shareholder theory and all that stuff, but they're just saying the obvious, and that, yeah, people are going to act in their interest.
It wasn't always that obvious, though, in economic theory.
Yeah, that's because they're a bunch of eggheads, and it's not obvious to them. But if you think about the incentives, and something like Charlie Munger would say is, just whatever the incentives drive the outcomes, or show me the incentive and all. And the incentive for companies is to obviously maximize shareholder value.
Well, sure.
And they're just going to do that over and over again. It's very predictable. And in the government case, the government, well, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to try to get reelected. You don't need a theory about why it happens or how it happens. It just does. We don't even need to think about it that much. It's how does it happen? So how does it happen in the government case? Is, well, you got to give away stuff in order to get elected, so they're going to do more of that. Or how do you stay in business, meaning pay for more debt? Well, you print more money. It's just obvious.
Well, it's obvious, but it's also obvious that it doesn't work over a long period of time.
Right, but if you listen to shareholder value and shareholder theory, I mean, it's...
Well, but even that is a massive debate. Is it short run or is it long run?
Right, and it's a stupid debate. It's
no,
just
it isn't.
You need to just accept that what is and what isn't.
No, it absolutely is not. I'll say to you why. You know why it wouldn't be a stupid debate? If you were to say, this is one of the toughest things I did in grad school. Design a compensation plan for a CEO or president, or whatever you want to call him, that maximizes the long-term value of the company.
Exactly.
And right,
if you look
that.
To someone, if you look to someone like, you know, in the business world, what they'll say is, okay, you get to do it for 3 years or 2 years, but then after that you're out of the job and you just get kicked out. You don't get paid anymore. So the incentive system for, call it the congressman, would be any time that you're over this amount of deficit or this, is everybody's out of the job, they don't get paid. Just like in the business world.
Well, you have an you could do that every year. You have an election every 2 years. You don't have that in the business world. They get the point. The board members, they
but
stay there forever.
But it's not going to happen because the incentives don't line up that way.
Well, I mean, it's the whole thing is it can be turned somewhat of a mess. But
the program would be there's some limit, and then if you exceed that limit, then you're just fired.
Well, but I mean. I won't say there used to be because you know, there always were sleazeballs, but it's somewhat implied. Now, we're not talking about wars and abortion and all those kinds of things, which unfortunately enter the. But if you and I are running for mayor of you know, Napertucky or someplace, I mean, what are we really competing for, Greg? I mean, we're going to start with the fact, I would think, rational people. Would start with the fact that, okay, I'm going to tax you $50 a year, and I'm going to get you all the police you need, I'm going to fix your potholes, the kids are going to go to school, all that stuff, because I'm an efficient manager, and that's what I'm running on as a politically, and here's my track record that said, by the way, I've done that. I've managed money for people here, they did okay, I managed this firm, this firm did okay. You know, I have a history, by the way, I was also...
Of operating within the constraints,
which is great. And then all of a sudden you're going to say, well, Tom's really a pretty good guy, but guess what? You know, I have this some of these new plans. I can do everything that he says he's going to do, but I can do it for $48.
And I can do it with AI.
Well, whatever. So maybe you say, I'm way ahead of the game. He's an old Luddite. He doesn't know about this AI, but I'm going to use this AI, and I'm going to do it for $45. Okay, but that's a legitimate, we're competing for that job. But now all of a sudden I get the job, and I start... lying to you about the budget, okay, or borrowing money and not counting it, or doing something like that to the point where I'm going to push it off till people that are not born yet. And you sit there and go, hey, this time guy's doing this stuff for $30. You're saying it's going to be $50. Yeah, but time's cheating because he's borrowing ahead. Okay, so we're so engrossed in the cheating part for so long that we don't know if we're on foot or horseback, right? It's a problem. You're right. It's a problem.
The cheating. I don't know. That's kind of loaded. But is it permissible? Is it not permissible? And we've gone full. To the point of look at the incentives based on like the presidential election right now. Both of them are running to stay out of jail.
Well, that's a problem. Yeah.
Those are two major incentives in running for the president.
We'll take a real simple, then we got to break. Take a real simple Chicago question and what is legitimate and what isn't. Now, I don't know if you remember him too much, Richard M. Daley. I mean, I used to talk to him at the club all the time. Nice guy. We weren't friends, but we were acquaintances. We talked 3 days a week. He was a good buddy of my brother because they'd work out every Saturday together, but he only two people in the place. But they, you know, the mayor and I actually one night we had a conversation about it. I told him it was totally illegitimate, that he did it. I mean, I'm not that dumb. He went out and he sold Millennium Park. All right, so that is a city piece of property. That's a city asset. No, it's an asset. It's not an income stream. It's an asset. So I sell Millennium Park for, pick a number, $10 billion. It wasn't that high. Well, there ought to be a method that everybody understands. Citizens, and I mean, you know, not every citizen is going to understand it, but every politician say, okay, if I do something like that, this is not an income stream or taxes or whatever. This is an asset. The city owns it. The people own it. Now, if I sell this for $1 billion, and it's a good sale, and you know, blah blah blah, we have somebody else manage it, it could be a good idea. I'm not saying it isn't. All right, but now there's
he didn't ask anybody. He just kind of
okay.
Did
but, here's the issue. It like if I endowed a professorship, that $1 billion, there should be a state law or something that says that $1 billion goes in a fund, and whatever interest we earn on it for the next 100 years, if we're earning 5%. The mayor gets to use $50 million in this year's budget as income, not the whole billion.
Yeah, I mean that would be a responsible way of figuring it out. But it turns out that we've built into our system incentives in which we give that extra power either to the president, to the mayor, or whatever, to kind of do what they want. And
well, I don't think we do. I think they take it. That's the problem. I mean, if you were to have a vote that says,
well, there's
"Hey, mayor, should you sell the parks and take them into current this year and say you have a balanced budget?" I think most people would say no.
Right, they would definitely say no, in a vote type situation. But in the same thing with war, sometimes we say you deal with it.
Well, let's go to break. We can get John in. I think speaking of votes, I think the mayor has opened up a huge can of worms.
Yeah,
because there's going to be a vote now
again.
About these stadiums.
Again,
the same thing's going to happen here as in Kansas City. People are going to say, "Don't give them a dime." SP Futures up 25. NASDAQ Futures 101. We come back. We have Mr. Flanagan. We also have Mike Murphy talking about what's going on in the Middle East. I was going to talk about it, but then again, why don't we get somebody here who knows what the hell he's talking about? We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks and jocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Saxon Jackson. I'm talking about Greg Pappas with us in the studio. SP Futures up 26 now. Anthony Futures on 107. Goldman's earnings just came out. It beat an a top first quarter estimates. Hello, when you tap estimates. Stacks up $12 trading 402.40. So going the other way from JP Morgan the other day. And probably won't talk about it so much today, Greg, but one of these mornings this week, let's talk about the bank earnings that you brought up earlier and we didn't talk enough about, because I'm gonna. You're not supposed to do this stuff. You're supposed to know everything, right? I've never been able, since I've been in the business, the thing I can figure the least are bank earnings. I can never figure out if these guys are. They seems like they have so much
lots
ability.
Of accounting, funny but funny
yeah,
business.
Yeah, I can never tell whether they're doing good or bad. It seems like they can monkey with it to hell's half acre. And oh, by the way, they do real bad. The government gives them money, so it's hard to even. You know, I don't know how you. Anyway, I'm just saying it's not my valuation spot. We have the Dow. We got to get to let's get to the pre-market here. The Dow's actually up 182, and some of that has to do with Goldman Sachs. Obviously, it's up 1351 now, so that's a whole 120 points in the Dow right there, because it's like 7 or 8 is the multiplier. Pretty much everything in the Dow is green. Again, this is after a horrible last Friday. We're in Europe. The DAX up 164.9. These guys are all down Friday. FTSE actually is down 23.3%. CAC around up 73.9. So kind of wonder why exactly the FTSE is not following, but they are not. Oil down 59 cents, 85.07. These guys were up on Friday. These guys. Oil was up on Friday. Brent down 56 cents, 89.89. Natural gas unchanged, 177. RBOB unchanged, 279. On Friday, again, Dow was down 475. NASDAQ down 267. S&P down 75. So these are all in the mid, like 1.5% down. So that was like worst day since January. So that was not good. Over in Asia today, we got the Nikkei down 290.7%. Hang Seng down 121. That's 0.7%. But hanging above 16,000, 16.6. Shanghai up 37, 1.2%, 3,057. So they're kind of mixed over there. And yet another day with the Hang Seng and the mainland going different directions. Bonds today. 10-year up 8 basis points, 4.58. Again, this continues to creep. Not every day, but the general direction here is up. The Bund up 5 basis points, 2.41. Japan unchanged, 0.87. We've got gold up a dime, 23.74. They did a massive 65-hour spin on Friday from top to bottom. We'll see what happens this week. Silver up 23 cents, 28.56. Copper up 5 cents, 4.31. Boy, this was really the trade under $4. We could have just got some of this copper and we could just watch the world go by, right? As we're up, we'd be up 35 cents. That's a lot in that thing. Foreign exchange, U.S. dollar, again, it's fairly strong on change today. 106.5 against the euro and 124.8 against the pound. We've got crypto up 2,000, 66,212. It was up to 73, down to 64, now back to 66. A lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. 6:38 here in Chicago. We've got 50 degrees here, sunny and cooler. It's about 65 today. Phoenix, 59 right now. 78 today there with some clouds. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 23 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 44 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 18 minutes, and Stevenson is getting worse here. That's 294 to the Ryan is 31 minutes. Bulls lose to the Raptors. That was by 119. Or
Knicks.
Blues the Knicks, yeah. Bulls and
great
Knicks.
Game,
that was
by the
119-120. I missed that one.
Overtime. They were right there, and yeah. What's his name? DeRozan missed the floater at the end. Just missed.
Hawks lose to Hurricanes at home. That was 4-2. And the big news over the weekend was the Masters. Scottie Scheffler won by 4 strokes. He was 11 under, and that was tied, I think, going in with 10 holes left, and he won by 4. Ludwig Oberg.
How's that for a German name?
I think he's Swedish.
No, I think he's German.
Or whatever.
Whatever he is, yeah.
Whatever he is. Yeah. He was brand new, first major.
He might be Swedish, yeah.
Yeah, first major, and he won. He beat the rest of the field except for Scheffler, who's on a different planet right now. But he beat the rest of the field by 3. And he was like...
He's 23.
That was his first major, and he was eating every other hole. Just stuffing his face.
Well, he was at age 23, he was on their Ryder Cup team that won last year.
Right, right. And this was his first major, and he absolutely nailed it. So,
yeah. Well, the amount of wind on Thursday and Friday especially, I never saw anything like it. These guys are putting and it's supposed to break and it wasn't breaking.
Yeah. Scheffler was unstoppable.
Oh, yeah. He's just steady Eddie. He's just one after another.
Yeah.
He looked like Ben Hogan, for God's sake. Just never misses an iron shot. Just, you know, and if he gets in trouble.
He was the first favorite to win since Tiger, I think. In,
really?
Yeah. In 2004, 2005. So,
I felt sorry for Tiger. He's got that horrible leg. So he does pretty well on Thursday. Then all of a sudden, he's got to play 25 holes.
He made that cut, though.
Yeah, but he had to play 25 holes on Friday.
I think only 7 or 8 people finished under par.
Yeah. And then when the thing dries out, those greens, if you're in the wrong spot, you know, you get on the green and it rolls way off and all that stuff, man, that's just tough. The only good news is there is no rough, but still.
Yeah.
See, now, if you were a big shot, you'd have us on there. You'd get me as a guest.
That would be awesome. We need to work on that. Who do we know?
I know one of my buddies that I have a cocktail with every now and then. He's been on like every course there is. He can't get on the Masters. he's getting up there, and he goes, I still got to find a way to get on that one. So it's only open for like 3-4 months a year, right?
Yeah. There was a funny video circulating about a couple frat guys calling up the Masters and say, yeah, we'd like to get on today. I heard it's, you know, going to be nice out.
God.
This lady was like, you know, we have a tournament going on.
we have John and Mike. We got to talk war.
Good morning, all.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, Todd. Thanks.
What do you make of us dealing about politicians here? Because we have, just in terms of money and in terms of deficits and what are they going to do. And when we get Mike on, I want to quiz him about what went on this weekend. And it's I'm stunned at what happened and how there was what is Mike, a colonel? Or was he a captain? I think he must be.
No, I was a major. I retired as a major, Tom.
That's between captain and colonel?
That's correct.
You weren't the guy like in the book, were you? Major, 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 major?
No. Just Major Murphy trying to avoid Murphy's Law.
Oh, God. what was the story? This is in Catch 22. The guy's name was Major, 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 and they added another major to it, so they promoted him?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it was.
And the guy was, gotta remember this, he was a major, and they sent him the paychecks and everything, and they sent him, you know, the fact that he got promoted. And if you went to see him, and hence the name Catch 22, the secretary would say, or whatever, his aide, would say, you have to wait in the waiting room he's in. Then he would sneak out the back door, and the guy would say, okay, he's gone, you can go in. When he came back, they'd pull you back in the waiting room. Anyway, what a great book that was, Catch 22. I'm talking about the world. Anyway, so Mike, they had a general on, a retired general, and he was talking about this attack, and he was pretty stunned about the whole thing. He goes, I thought they were going to do something. He said, I don't know. I'm really stunned at what they did. He goes, they have all these assets kind of right around Israel, Hezbollah and those kind of guys. He says, this thing is not going to, be very successful. It's going to piss everybody off. And the people who were started to lean the Palestinians' way because the Israelis, a lot of people's opinion have kind of gone overboard on this Gaza thing or they're hitting too many innocent people. All of a sudden, they've changed world opinion back. He goes, I almost wonder if it's a diversion of something. He goes, it just makes absolutely zero sense. So as soon as he was talking like that, I said, you know, I better get Mike on here. And then, Mike, I went on nice thing about, the maps you can do online now. They're separated by a country. And what I sent you guys last night, the closest point between Israel and Iran is, what, 1,200 miles, 1,300 miles. And there's countries you got to fly over where all this crummy equipment they have. The logistics just seem like so screwed up. Can you make any sense out of it?
No, I can't, Tom. I just think it was a foolish maneuver on the Iranians' part because now they've irritated the Saudis and Jordan and, just as you said, people that might have gone their way, now they're not going to go their way. So,
did they go over? They've got to go over either Saudi, Jordan, or Syria to get there, right? Did they Did they only go over Syria? They must have gone over Jordan because Jordan knocked a bunch of them out, right? Did they?
Right.
Did they go over
Jordan
Saudi?
Definitely hit some. I don't think the Saudis did anything, and I doubt that the Syrians did anything, but I don't know that for a fact.
Do you think they went over Saudi? Because aren't they? They're not exactly buddies with them.
No, but I mean, they could have gone over Saudi, but the Saudis will try to. I think will try to stay out of it simply because they don't want to get involved with the Shias.
What, I mean, maybe more of a Lou question, but does anybody have a drone that can go 1,000 miles and drop any kind of a bomb? That seems like a long way if to go with any kind of a warhead.
Well, I don't. I think they were using the drones for surveillance, and then, I mean, they supposedly sent ballistic missiles and cruise missiles, both. And so the drones could have been doing surveillance for those missiles, but nothing was effective. I think they hurt a young child and they hit a military base. That's the only type of casualties that I'm aware of.
We've managed in Chicago, I don't imagine you from Virginia, we knocked off a young child and 10 other people 52nd and Damon in 10 minutes on Friday and Saturday morning. We did better than they did.
Right. Well, that's American life for you, I guess.
I don't know if, John, if you saw that. We had a 10 spot on Saturday. Doesn't even make national news, does it?
You know, the confirmation party.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Oh, they were killed at a confirmation party?
Yeah. It was 9:20 at night. They were having a party at somebody's house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, two guys pull up in a car and started open fire. Of course, nobody knows nothing. I hope they catch him, but I don't know about that. So, but Mike, now the Israelis are coming back. Now they have to respond. I mean, is anybody, this reminds me to a certain extent like the Irish and the Brits. Did anybody ever remember at the end of the day who shot the first gun? But now these guys respond. Then could Iran be this dumb? How do you?
Well,
I got a million
Iran
questions here.
Iran said they were responding because of the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria or in Damascus, and so maybe if the Israelis do not respond, then Iran does nothing more. But just as you said, they have their proxies that they could respond with. So, I mean, and there's still a lot of rockets with the Lebanese Hezbollah, in that could target northern Israel. So I want to see how the stock market reacts to some of this today, and because, I think that the price of oil will go up. It already has. And so we'll see how this all plays out.
But Mike, just in terms of the weapons, and I don't want to go into some esoteric technical discussion, but just in terms of, I'm not a fan of the Iranians, for God's sake. I know, not 100, but I know a lot of people from Iran. Every one of them, very well educated, solid citizen. Doesn't ever want to go back, and can't wait for these guys to be out of office. I mean, that group seems unified that they don't like their government. But how can you be, in this day and age, if you don't have satellites and the other guys do, how the hell can you fight them? It's like you fighting somebody with a gun and you don't have one. How do you even program a cruise missile to go someplace if you don't have a satellite mapping to tell it where to go? I mean, what am I wrong here?
Well, I think they probably have some sort of mapping. From older maps, they could program it using the older maps, but they're not going to get the real-time imagery that you get from a drone or from satellite imagery from the day before or something like that. So I am not sure. I've never studied the Iranians. I don't know how efficient they are. So it's just, to me it was like a shot in the dark. It was like a Hail Mary. I just think it was really stupid for them to do what they did.
Well, that's what I actually, I'm just as sniffing as the general who was on. He goes, it made so little sense that I'm really wondering if it was even, if it's not part of something else. He goes, there's no military sense to it. He goes, is it to let everybody else think that that's all they have and then they do something else? I'm more suspicious now than before they did it, the guy said.
Well, and that could very well be true. They could have something else cooked up, so who knows?
Were you surprised that how much do you think, boy, I'm always talking about numbers. Allegedly, we shut down, what, I sent you guys an article, like 80 or 90 of them, either in Jordan or some other place, our equipment?
I think it was actually more than that, Tom. For some reason, I think it was 600, but I might be wrong.
Well, they supposedly lobbed 300, right? It says here.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was more than that.
Well, here's the article from Reuters. Now, again, it's just one article. U.S. military destroyed 80 drones, 6 missiles launched from Iran, Yemen, and U.S. CENTCOM. Now, those are the guys in Florida, CENTCOM?
Yeah, CENTCOM's at MacDill, right.
Okay, so they, according to those guys, we knocked out 80 drones and 6 missiles. What do you suppose that cost us in terms of money? Dude?
Probably quite a bit of money, yeah. I would say, millions of dollars, but I don't know that for a fact.
What do you make of, when I keep you the whole time here this morning, but Lou sent out that article about the Air Force, and again, it seems like I'm jumping around here, but I think both of you guys, or three of you guys, I think I'm really not. Lou sent out something about in the last, how many years was it, Mike or Jan? If you guys remember, how many we've retired, destroyed, whatever you want to call it, an average of what, 200 planes a year, and we bought 60 or something, or 50, I forget the actual numbers, and that nobody seems to want to buy any more. But instead of having the lines still open where you can constantly upgrade and so forth and keep these planes, when you shut the line down and they become so impossible to maintain, you end up getting rid of the planes. We're talking about the first 15s, we're talking about the Warthogs, we're talking about all these planes that actually had a purpose. And then they're saying the reason why they can't get any money is because right now the Navy, because of what's going on over in China, Navy seems to have the top ear of Congress, and they're spending more money on ships than they are on planes, and all of a sudden we're doing this. Or is something like this designed, is there some man behind the curtain with China and Russia and all these idiots, Korea, is there something that no matter what they're doing at every level, are they just trying to drain us or see what we got? Or what it means, could they be that long term where they're just going to try and triple our military budget for the next 3 years and have people here get pissed off about it and just fall further and further behind? Could it be something like that? Because it seems like this thing was never going to be successful.
Yes, I think it could be something like that, because that's what we did during the Reagan era. We essentially bankrupted Russia. We had them making weapons that they would never use. And then we ended up, essentially breaking their economy. I think the Chinese do think long term, and I think they are probably want us to break our economy. And unfortunately, the Biden administration is doing that by pouring money, money that we don't have into the weapons or into the environment, whatever else we're pouring the money into.
Well, I mean, it appears we're going to have to spend more in the military. I mean, everybody kind of gets that. But how do you match that up with the Republican, we're never going to tax a corporation idea? I mean, at some point, you got to pay for it. And I don't want my taxes going up. I'm sure you guys don't either. But, I mean, come on, money's money, right? You got to give them someplace. So you got to find out the people that aren't paying, because the people that are paying don't have any money left, right?
Right. I mean, we're in a kind of an unsustainable trajectory.
I mean, if the Chinese pull some crap, I don't think. I mean, you were involved in the budgetary process. Where does something like this? Now we just spent a bunch of dough messing with the Houthis, right? Now we spent a bunch of dough doing this.
Some, right?
I mean,
right.
Some of this can't be all in just. We budget a little more than we need to because we know something's going to happen somewhere. We got to be getting beyond that little buffer, aren't we? With all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, and we're probably cutting people, as people are, what happened where I worked is people were attriting, they weren't replaced. So, you put more work on the people that are left, and then you neglect, you could neglect areas of the world. So I mean, we'll see how all this works out. But, you know, costs are rising. Well, so costs rise. You know, you have to develop more or have to give more for weapons. So then you cut the people. So then you lose your expertise.
Well, that sounds like a zero-sum game.
Here's a question. Do you think that Reagan would be celebrating somewhere if he was still alive and that the space defense actually worked? Because didn't they intercept cruise missiles?
Yes, they did. And the technology that the Israelis have and we have actually worked pretty well. And he might be celebrating, actually.
Again, Mike, there's always a question from somewhere. They have this Iron Dome and we have all this stuff. Okay, so let's say they lab 300 pieces of crap, basically. Now, how much of the Iron Dome did those 300 pieces of crap that didn't get there, how much did that deplete the dome, I guess, is my question.
It depletes the dome some, Tom, but I don't know how much ammo the Israelis have left. I know that we keep replacing stuff. For a while, it was the interceptor missiles. I don't think the interceptor missiles are part of the Iron Dome. But, you know, and supposedly Patriots were used also. And so, you know, Patriot missile would be expensive. It's probably at least, well, I don't know. I can't even begin to speculate. So, you know, they fired at roughly 600 or 300 missiles, so they would have depleted their stocks by at least 300 or 600 or however much.
So, but we don't mean... Nobody, Israelis, I guess, maybe tell you, but do they have 50,000 in the dome? I doubt if it's not that much. Maybe it's five.
No, they don't. I don't think they have that much because they've already been asking us for. Well, they were asking us for interceptor replacements. I don't know about the Iron Dome.
What's an interceptor replacement?
That's another system that they have. I think that's the Iron Dome, I think, is their highest level, and the interceptor is a. Another level that they have.
U.S. jets shot down
quite a few drones.
Yeah, they
right?
shot down some drones, and the Navy shot down. They said, which you know, they could be way underestimating, or I don't know what you want to telegraph, but the Navy said they shot down at least 3 ballistic missiles from one of the destroyers. I think.
Well, how the hell does a destroyer get over Jordan?
I think the destroyer saw the missiles go up, and they immediately started launching.
All right.
They can track them, Tom, and they can, you know, they can intercept them over neutral
That was
territory.
The Aegis missile defense.
Okay.
Yes, it was Aegis, I think.
Well, they didn't try and go around anything, did they? Like use the Red Sea and come up the Mediterranean side, or did they?
No, not to my knowledge. They showed the path on TV the other night, and it was all over, it was mostly over Jordan, and I would assume they went over some of Iraq, too, but I don't think Iraq would have the ability to respond. So.
It's just, real quick, Mike, because we're going to dash and let you go, and thank you for showing up. How do you even plan a war if there's a country between you and the guys you're fighting? That doesn't want you there.
Well, that's what doesn't make any sense to me. And, you know, the Jordanians, you know, they helped us. So, as did the Brits and the French. So, you know, it's bringing people together that wouldn't normally fight together. So, well, the British and the French would fight with us. The Jordanians, maybe not so much. But, you know, the Jordanians, I think, are a proud nation. And they don't like what's going on there.
Well, this... Another level here, and I'll talk maybe more about this with Jen. It seems like, I mean, one article I read last night when I was trying to send stuff to you guys was that one guy was saying this is a public relations disaster for Iran. They were just getting they were just getting everybody on their side. Now all of a sudden everybody says screw you guys.
Well, I think it's the Iranians. I don't think anybody was really ever on their side. I think, you know, we have. We have people that are siding with the Palestinians.
Right, that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
So, for the Iranians, it is a PR disaster. So, it was just a foolish mission. I just don't understand it. That is that, as you talked about that general, and was it Hertling that was talking to
him? Retired African-American. He sounded friggin' brilliant.
Oh, I don't know who that would have been then. He could have been an Air Force officer, too.
I thought they said Army general, but maybe not. But God, the guy sounded like he knew what he was talking about.
Right.
I mean, you don't get to be a general being a dummy, I hope, do you?
No, you don't. Well, but you got AWOL at Austin, so who knows?
God, well, there's always going to be one, right?
Right.
To get from major to colonel, that's a massive step, right? Isn't that approved by Congress, a colonel?
All of them are approved by Congress, so.
Okay, I thought it was a colonel and general where they had to run it by.
Majors get, well, the Army makes the decision, and then they get approved by Congress. They're all tied up into the budget, too, actually. You got to pass a budget in order to promote people.
Well, in the field, a captain commands what? And then what does a major command?
A captain commands a company, usually, and that can range from, I mean, the company I had 240 people. That was kind of big. A major normally doesn't command anything. They're usually a staff officer at the battalion level, which can be, you know, range from 600, 800, maybe smaller, maybe a little bigger. But in the infantry units, it's usually about 800 people.
So a captain commands what?
And a battalion will have four or five companies.
Why don't you take us 30 seconds up the chain? I used to know this. A sergeant runs a squad, then a lieutenant runs how many squads, then a captain runs how many?
A lieutenant runs three or four squads, and that's a platoon, and then a captain runs a company. A major will be an executive officer, an operations officer for a battalion, and a battalion consists of three or four companies. A brigade will consist of three or four battalions, usually three battalions at least.
That's a colonel at that point?
Yes, and then a division, which is a two-star general, will generally have at least three brigades. At Bragg, they had three brigades. And then, so that's a division, and then there's two or three divisions. It depends. Now they task organize everything, but there's probably three divisions in a corps. Although in Europe, 5th Corps is really, it just has one division there, and then other ones come in and end up working with them if there will ever be a war.
And one place, like if you say Fort Bragg or Fort something something, usually is one, that's one division, or is it bigger than that, or one army?
Yes, Fort Bragg now it's Fort Liberty, it has one division. Well, no, that's not true. It had a division and a corps headquarters. So I was in an MP brigade that was subordinate to the corps headquarters. Then I went down to division to be in the MI battalion that supported the division. And Fort Stewart had a division there. Fort Carson has a division there. There used to be three divisions in Germany, the 1st Armored Division, the 3rd Infantry Division, and I forget what the third one was, and then you had 5th Corps Headquarters. So all of those divisions were subordinate to, we had two corps over there. We had the 5th Corps Headquarters was up by Frankfurt, and then 7th Corps Headquarters was down at Stuttgart. So at one point, they might have had six divisions in Germany.
Wow. And so we're like this, where's the water? Camp Pendleton, is that, that's Marines?
Camp Pendleton is Marines, and that's out at San Diego, I think.
Where's the place they're talking about the water's lousy? Was it Pendleton?
Oh, that's...
Camp Lejeune.
Yeah, that is Camp Lejeune, you're right. And that was, and that's mainly, I thought it was a training place for Marines in basic training. But they probably had permanent party there, too.
You might have met him. Robert, that guy works for the Federal Reserve. He grew up there. He was an Army, and he at camp. Wherever he was at the time is the place when Lyndon Johnson sent after he said we couldn't win the war in Vietnam, he sent people the next day. They came from the camp he was, where he was growing up. And a lot of the people that got killed over there he knew from the base. So he,
right,
he's not a big fan of Lyndon Johnson's, let's put it that way.
Right.
Just wow. Mike, thank you very much, buddy. Real good additions and stuff, because people don't know how this works, and you don't want to know all the detail, but the more you know, the more I think you get a picture of what's going on. I have a hunch we'll be back to you on this subject sometime this week when somebody else does something crazy. But take care of yourself. John, we'll be right back and talk about what's going on in the city and the economy here. SP Futures up 27, NASDAQ Futures up 114, short break. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas in studio. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. John, what do you make of all this? You've heard Greg and I talk about the market reaction. You've heard Mike talk about some of the military stuff. I filled everybody in on how far away these countries are and who's in the middle. And so I hope that everybody knows a little bit more than when we started. I know a little bit more than when I started researching all this stuff. So, okay, now we know a little more. Now what?
Well, I agree with what you and Mike and the sources you were quoting mentioned about this, that it's got all of the aura of war games rather than the real thing. I mean, one of the things I think I know about military strategy is that you're always at an advantage if you can surprise your enemy. But there was absolutely no surprise here. I mean, compared to the October 7th, Hamas attack on Israel, which supposedly was a surprise, but this one was so carefully stage managed that you could set your watches by the timetable. So I don't think that this was designed for any kind of strategic importance or value. But I think what it really does do is it puts the U.S. in a somewhat different position, I think maybe leading up possibly to a ceasefire movement by showing that it's got the upper hand, to demonstrate to people that they're not going to let the war expand. And the Iranians, I think, have probably cooperated in this too, because they don't want to die on their sword over this kind of stuff either. So I think it probably had a financial incentive to it as well, to make it look like the military knows what it's doing. The military has taken a lot of heat in the last couple of years for being unprepared and understaffed and not meeting quotas and so on. So if they can get any kind of PR value out of deterring this, I think, very, illusory attack by Iran, it helps them in their budget. It helps, the stock market. So I don't think it had any kind of strategic importance in this other than to keep fires, burning a little less hot on the home front and to, keep this kind of stuff off of the headlines to the extent that they can. I think it's played so badly to the Democrats in this lead up, where they're trying to balance their support for Israel with the left wing of their party that is vehemently opposed to Israel. And I don't remember anything like this playing out on the political stage to this extent in the past, where there was such vehement anti-Israel screaming. So this is something that the Democrats, I don't think, know how to handle. And this may be an attempt to kind of, make it look like they're more in control than they may really be.
Well, Jan, whether or not it's the Democrats or who's ever in charge always seems to be having some issues with. If you can follow, instead of trying to solve the problems of the Democrats or the Republicans or the world in general, how about solving my problem? I am a massive supporter of the Jewish state. I have not liked this Netanyahu forever. For 20 years I haven't liked the guy. I don't trust him, and I don't think he's doing a very good job with this. How do I balance the fact that I'm a huge supporter of the state, yet I can't stand him? I think he, especially when he called off the election, he's no better than a guy in Ukraine or whatever. If you can balance it for me, maybe you can balance it for the government. How am I supposed to think about this?
Well, you're right. Chuck Schumer, recently, calling for elections in Israel. I mean, I don't think this goes down well with the Israelis. And I never had much use for Netanyahu either. But I think at times like this, he's played the PR game pretty masterfully, and he's got, I think, more support in Israel than he had a year ago.
Well, that war does that, right?
Well, yep. This is, we've with our support for Israel, we have also, made ourselves, in some ways, a vassal state when it comes to somebody like Netanyahu, who knows how to play this very well.
That's exactly my. Maybe I already did beat up too much, but all we do is look what happened here, John. If you were out of all the things that maybe I would criticize Senator Dick Durbin for, voting no on the Iraq war when at the time how unpopular that was, I have to give the man credit. The idea when after 9/11, the Patriot Act, if you were to suggest one page of that, some right or privacy or whatever they were taken away from you, if you were to say, wait a minute, well, immediately 15 people down the bar or at the coffee shop or in the library, hey man, what do you want? You want some dude with a turban raping your wife? Right? It's called the Patriot Act. You got to vote for it. Well, we're no strangers to that here. Now, everybody's got to be in Israel if you're pro. They've got people demonstrating there too, saying this guy's handling it wrong. Get him the hell out of here. Let's get somebody else. I'm not saying they're right or whatever. I don't know the politics as much as maybe they do, but the dude is hanging like a thread before this happened.
Well, that's the thing. He's hanging by a much stronger thread now.
Well, that's my point, and he knows that.
Yeah, we know too. And what I'm concerned about here is that we've got, such a division on the left that. Leading up to the convention here in Chicago, which looks like it's going to be a Donnybrook. I've said this before.
Are you joining the National Guard at your age?
Well, but I better have the National Guard on call time, I'll tell you.
I told you what happened to my buddy, who hopefully you'll meet this week. He was in the National Guard. He got called up in 68, and they're pushing back the crowd. And who do you think he was pushing? His wife.
Yep.
Somehow, the whole length of the whole line of National Guardsmen and protesters, he ended up right across from his wife. What do you think the chances of that were?
Was he involved in the National Guard introduction in April after the King riots too?
I don't know.
We had the National Guard in Chicago a few times that year.
You were busy in '68, and I bet he was. Yeah. I mean, he was in there for a few years. I bet he was. And when they call people up, they call everybody up. I don't know. I know nothing about the National Guard.
I hate to say it, but I think we're looking at a repeat, and I think the omens are much worse now than they were then, because as divided as the country was over Vietnam, you've got major differences now in geopolitics that we didn't have then, and you've got the cities in the worst shape they've been since 1968, probably.
Oh yeah,
if not worse. And I don't think that I begin to think that anything like what we saw this weekend with the attack, so-called attack, is a diversionary tactic, as the general you quoted seemed to believe. And I can't unravel all the stuff to say.
He just said, I wonder, because he said this thing is so poorly thought out. unless it's just to drain resources from other people.
Right, and you know, and I agree. Iran would not do this unless there was some, you know, something on the table that they had to do this in order to get something else that we're not being told about. So,
well, what?
There's been lots of examples of that history too, Tom. You know, to humiliate yourself in order to, you know, make up as a bandit, like a bandit somewhere else down the road.
Well, I have a great fear about this the whole way. I know that the Democrats and a lot of people. And I'm not so sure that the Republican convention is going to be totally unfazed by this. So far, it seems like maybe they are. But if anybody thinks that Trump is going to win, why would you just demonstrate at one place? I mean, I'm just saying. You know, who knows what these guys are planning on doing?
Well,
but
the thing is, there's so many, you know, different opinions about, you know, why Trump is the enemy. So the Republicans seem to be coalescing around him, which I'm somewhat relieved to see, because they certainly resisted doing that in 2016 or 2020, at least the mainstream Republicans or the rhinos. But the Democrats now have a real division of opinion unlike any I've ever seen.
I don't care if Trump would have won and this same thing was going down. And you know, let's not get into the part where he's so strong, he's so tough, nobody would take him on kind of crap, because nobody knows that. If he was in the same situation, he, just like Biden, is really hoping for a ceasefire before the convention. Not hoping, working towards it. And they might get it. Which I think diffuses a lot of it.
I'm all for ceasefire.
Oh, me too.
We had no interest in it, and still have no interest in it in Ukraine. And look what we have to show for that kind of resistance.
Well, we have, and this is, I think, the danger. Well, there's a lot of dangers. In my opinion, you got four people, and I don't put Biden in this class. He's not trying to stop elections or anything like that. I mean, you've got the guy in Israel, knows the second the war is over, he's out, I think. You've got the guy in Ukraine, with my Ukrainian people here that I know, Angelica and the rest of them, some of the people I meet. The fact that the guy stopped the elections has them really wondering about him as well. Obviously, you've got Putin, and the minute he stops doing any of this stuff, somebody's going to kill him. And then you've got the guys in Iran, where 90% of the people want them out. So you've got four governments, at least, that somehow, if wars stop or the stuff stops, they're personally in trouble. Well, that's pretty friggin' dangerous, I think.
Well, and we're making it far more dangerous by backing these people.
Well, I mean, everybody's backing somebody. I mean, and you don't really want. We also have NATO responsibilities. I mean, I think if you and I lived in Poland, we sure as hell wouldn't want us to say, "Yeah, go give me Ukraine, screw it," you know, when they're right next to us. I mean, the Polish have a whole different view of the Russians than we do. They're far away from us. We don't seem to care. A lot of people don't, but maybe you should if you were close enough. I mean, if you're a Lithuanian of ancestry, you probably hope we don't give up on Ukraine, right?
Well, yeah, and we're trying to play all of those sides of the fence. As best we can, and of course we're bungling it, I think, and have been bungling it for a long time.
Well, we're also doing it without taxing corporations.
Well,
right, because like those guys.
The reason we're in Ukraine financially the way we are is because we created this mess in 2014, wanted this to happen, and now we don't know how to control it anymore. And how many lives have been lost while we dither about, you know, what we should do now instead of having rethought what we've been doing for the last 10, 15 years there.
Well, so you had saying this is not, I mean, I wish, you know, even though I love the debate, that, you know, well, we got more people from the right on the show now than from the left, since poor Brennan isn't feeling so hot, but hopefully he'll be back soon. This idea that it's one side or the other, I mean, George Bush, in the same couple of years, started a war and cut taxes. How do you do that? That to me is putting a war on a credit card, isn't it? And we're still paying for
that. All of my life?
Yeah, I mean, we're still paying that. Same thing with Johnson, right? I mean, everybody's... Right. If they were to come out to say... I mean, this one, you know, I don't know what you know about this one. But I mean, if he were to come out to say, and whenever we went and invaded Iraq, and this has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction, whatever, if he'd gone on national TV and said, here's the deal... a lot of pressure. People want to invade Iraq. Throw this guy out of there. He's got these weapons of mass destruction. It's going to cost us X. And oh, by the way, for the next 5 years, everybody's going to have a 20% income tax surcharge at every level. I don't think we go in, John. And that's what it would have cost. So am I right or wrong?
Oh, you know, you're right. But my cynicism has grown so much, Tom. I can find all sorts of reasons why the Afghanistan adventure was to get rid of the Taliban so it would free up the poppy trade, because the Taliban had put the kibosh on that. And the U.S. loves the poppy trade. Let me tell you.
There are people who think that's where the CIA gets a lot of their money, but I have no idea where it's
thrown. Same thing in Vietnam too.
Yeah.
I mean, none of these are wars like the ones that were sold on the evening news, with the domino effect of states falling victim to all this BS that was hurled at us. I think we'll never get the full story on it, but I think it was largely based on the economics of drugs, nefarious purposes, trafficking, everything else, and it's still that today.
Well, why do you? And I don't. I'm a firm believer that the reason why everybody bitches about the press, and the press to me doesn't do anywhere near as good a job as I think maybe they used to, and even then I don't think they were perfect, is that nobody wants to pay for it. Everybody expects it's independent news. Well, somebody's got to get paid, right? You have a family, you got to get a paycheck.
Well, look at the taxpayer independent news we have, Tom. Have you been following the story about NPR? Yuri Berliner, who's one of their senior editors, did this piece in the Free Press last week, completely unmasking how deceitful this bunch has been, that there's no registered Republicans in the 87 staff members at the top. It all are Democrats. They all are conformed in their worldview, and he's probably going to be out of a job pretty soon by going public with this stuff. But the taxpayers funding this garbage. I mean, I don't mind it if there's going to be a public radio or public television or anything else to make it.
The taxpayers gave Jeff Fort money, for God's sake, and invited him to Nixon's inauguration party.
Well, I know. at least that was a diverse expenditure,
Well, I mean, I don't really have a problem, John, with either side, I'll use the term, punching the news, all right, in terms of their direction.
My point is, with something like NPR, there's really a law that says this is supposed to be even-handedly funded.
Oh, yeah.
And fair disclosure, all this stuff, even balanced reporting and so on. And this is supposedly what the taxpayers are getting for it. And even that is a complete sham. So then you put it into private hands with a news network. Can you really expect any better when it's so tilted?
Well, I mean, if people are paying for it, which they don't want to, okay, if people are paying for it, I mean, just look at, you don't have to go further than what we're doing right now. And Stacks and Jacks, we give, I think, as much facts as we can for both sides, and we have people from both sides that have opinions, but I always try to get as much facts out of the people, even if you don't agree with the person, you love listening to them because they bring you stuff that nobody else does. But I'm sort of like, oh God, I can't believe I'm going to say this because he's probably listening. I'm an awful lot like Kevin in a lot of ways. Tell me, give me your opinion, whatever you want, but in your article, give me some facts that are true to where you push your opinion, okay? And I'm not saying, but if you're going to give me the facts, give me, the whole story. And if you do, and say, these support what I think here, I don't have a problem with that, John, but if you've got to lie on the facts or make them incorrect, I don't understand why with this, for instance, subjects seem all different to people. I'm skipping around, but I'm not really. I don't understand why, with the whole idea of the Bears and the Sox, how much print, how many jaw-slacking words on TV have you heard about these stadiums? I have not heard one fact, Jen, not one. Why doesn't somebody, someplace, now maybe they know where they're, there are axes being gored too, or whatever, or bread is being buttered, whatever you want to talk about. Why doesn't the Tribune on page one or the Sun-Times say the Bears have been in Soldier Field for 20 years? By the way, this is what we estimate the Bear family has made every one of the last 20 years, and here's the rent they've paid. And oh, by the way, the White Sox. Here's how this stadium was funded. It's funded by people downtown having a drink or eating. Sox have never paid a nickel stadium is underwater in terms of the taxpayer still owes this. Sox have never paid a nickel for that. And by the way, this is what their rent has been the last 20 years. Don't even get an opinion on it. Just put the numbers out there. Let people form their own opinion. That's why I used to love...
Imagine the opinion they would form, Tom.
Well, this is just what the news, but maybe not. I'm saying... that's why I really, in terms of the blame, now you can blame dumb people, it doesn't get anywhere. I couldn't wait. We lived down south. My buddy JD and Dr. J and I lived in this house in Beverly. Big house. Everybody had their own, like, floor. So it was pretty cool. We listened to the news. Obviously, John and I were trading, and one of the guys was working for me, the other guy, JD. So we were pretty much up on the news. We weren't doing, you know, podcasts or anything. But, John was still, at the time, he was trying to get involved in the press, and he was doing stuff, and once in a while, I'd cover for him. But I couldn't wait to get the U.S. News and World Report or Newsweek. We always got U.S. News and World Report. We either got one whoever the special time or Newsweek, right, being the cheapos that we were. And I couldn't wait. I hear the news, what's going on. You know, it was the some war the Israelis had over there. And I couldn't wait to get the U.S. News and World. Now, there was no internet at the time. So I get the thing, and here's a 20-page color synopsis in the middle. I don't know how much. I'm sure somebody, I'm not going to say like you, but somebody would say, oh, God, U.S. News and World Report was somewhat biased. They could very well have been. But, John, I'm sitting there going, okay, here's the battle lines. Here's the property. Here's where these guys' country line is. Here's where the divisions are. Here's a list of how many tanks these guys got, how many tanks the other guys got, planes. I got an incredible view, right? I could, even though they probably had their opinion, I was able to form my own because of the facts they gave me. I don't see that anywhere anymore, do you?
Well, are there any crusaders in the media, Tom? They'd much rather serve these masters. As long as the Bears are in Chicago or nearby to Chicago, there's a lot of newsprint that both newspapers can sell is to give them coverage, and the TV stations and the radio outlets the same way. Once you start taking them on and make it look like you have somehow turned on them, that's just like biting the hand that feeds.
I'm not asking the sports guy to do it, but somewhere in the editorial department, they should say, just so everybody knows, because we're going to fight about this for the next 3 years, here are the facts, here's where we're starting. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think they know what they're up against money-wise. If any newspaper in Chicago really took on the Chicago Teachers Union, who do you think would win?
I think back in the day when, because I used to do this as a kid for my... When I took the 12 cents to the corner every night because he wanted his newspaper at 6:30, and he paid for it, it would have been a quarter he'd have paid. I'm not going to say it was 5 hours, he probably wouldn't have paid for it. When you had a bazillion people doing that, you had a whole different, the Tribune had a whole different clientele than they do today. Plus, you had the Daily News at night and the Chicago American. So if you screw up in the morning, they gleefully said how bad you screwed up in the morning, right?
Right, and all those papers had their favorites and their Bet Noirs, and it was a constant. I mean, that was what was great about having multiple, you know, newspapers that were pretty reputable, all of them, really.
Well, the Daily News had their own people in Europe during World War II.
Well, they had the best Washington coverage, they had the best international news bureau, better than the Tribune for a long time.
And they had Mike Royko.
The best writers, you know, those days are, you know, that ship has sailed. What you've got now is in the event any newspaper took on the Chicago public, you know, the schools, the teachers unions, you can imagine the onslaught of bile that the teachers union could put out all over the place and humiliate any news agency that took them on. They've got more money, they've got more clout, and, you know, I don't think any newspaper would go so far as to really show what's happened to the Chicago Teachers Union, because they're looking at their own kind of strangulation in the process too. So we've got this horrible system that you would like a press as a check on, and it becomes enslaved to it.
It's exactly. I think you're right about that. Hey, got Nancy on in a second. I hope you hang in there because we haven't had her for a while. Hey, what do you make of this whole shooting? First the police shooting, then the thing on Damon the other night, and I was stunned by what the police chief talked about the police shooting of this guy with the million shots, 96 shots, whatever it was, and. He was saying how young the cop that did it was, what, 23, was emptied a bunch. He goes, you have no idea how young this force is because between COVID and all the other stuff, everybody's retired. Well, you know what, Jen? I love the police. Dad was a policeman. I have police plates on my truck. I the idea that people can retire at 55 and get a paycheck right away, that's got to stop. I mean, I'm not talking about if you're disabled or anything like that. I know it's a tough job. I know all that stuff, but I don't know how tough it is. I've never done it. But the idea that we're paying people to retire at 55 when they're probably going to live to be 100, the numbers don't match. You can retire when you're 40, John. You're not getting a check till you're 65. I'm sorry.
You're right. You're right, Tom. But the reason they retire in such great numbers at such young ages is because they can see the writing on the wall too. We've got a climate here that forces them to retire. I wouldn't want to do that job
I'm not blaming any individual person. I thought I was pretty clear about that. I just said
I'm just saying though that. You could revamp the whole pension system, but in a climate where the police had a clear mission of what they're there to do and they got support for it, you would see people hanging out in various capacities. They wouldn't have to be, you know, beat cops or anything, but they could be detectives, they could be lots of stuff. And instead, we've made it such a hostile situation that they don't want to be there at all.
I'm never going to force anybody to go into one of these situations and get shot at. If that's your calling, my hat's off to you. Whatever. I'll donate. I'll do whatever I have to do to keep you there. But at age 55, you know what? You're going to go work for Streets and Sand. You're going to do something. You're not getting a check. We just can't afford it. The numbers just aren't there, as much as I might like you personally. It's like California letting people retire after 20 years. Didn't you used to be able to get out of the prison system after 20 years? You know what? I love you. I wouldn't want that job, but I can't pay at 45 when you live to be 100. No, I can't do 80 years salary for 20 years work, John. We can't do that. The numbers don't force it. Okay, go work for the forestry or do something, but not whatever. I'm just saying. SPV is up 25, Nancy up 100. We'll be right back. Short traffic weather sports. We have Nancy on the line already. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas here in studio. SP Futures, we'll do this quick. SP Futures up 33, NASDAQ Futures up 123. We're trying to get back a lot of what we were flying down on Friday. A lot of it was anticipation of Iran doing something. They did. They were very ineffective. Our guys and other people seem to have intercepted just about everything, which is terrific. But it's also got people kind of scratching their heads on just why the Iranians even did that. Did they think it was going to be affected? Is there another purpose? It's got everybody kind of... I mean, we've been talking about it for a while now this morning, and what in the hell were they trying to accomplish? Did they, or whatever? This is a way of review. On Friday, we were down a bunch. Dow was down 475, S&P up 75, NASDAQ up 267. So I'm going to say we're up about half of that now. So we got like half of it back so far. Over in Europe, DAX up 207 now. It's 1.2%. Again, these guys are down Friday. FTSE down 2, so something, they don't like it in FTSE so much. CAC around, however, is up 89, that's over 1%, so I'm saying something's wrong with the FTSE, why they don't like the world this morning. Over in S&P, I'm talking about Asia here, Nikkei down 290.7%, Hang Seng down 121.7%, Shanghai, however, was up 37, 1.3%, so again, mixed bag over there between Hang Seng and the mainland. We've got bonds. Up 12 basis points, 4.62, and this is what you have to watch here, I think. Bund up 7 basis points, 2.43. Japan unchanged, 0.87. We've got gold down $1.90 here, 23.72. Gold had a $60 turnaround on Friday. Silver up 29 cents, 28.62. Copper up 7 cents, 4.32. So copper is kind of the most steady one right now. It's kind of creeping every day. We've got crypto up 1,800, 66,054. They crashed a little on Friday as well, trying to make some of that back. That's good enough on this stuff. Greg, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. 7:35 here in Chicago. We've got 50 degrees right now, sunny and cooler today, a high of 65. Phoenix, 59 now, a high of 78. A few clouds there. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 35 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 61 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 49 minutes. And the Ryan from 95th is 29 minutes. Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 40 minutes. Bulls lose at Knicks in overtime, 119-120. Hawks lose to the Hurricanes at home. That was 4-2. Sox lose to Reds at home. That was 11-4. Cubs win at Mariners, 3-2. Diamondbacks beat the Cardinals, 5-0. And Scheffler and Hoberg were the top two finishers in the Masters.
Wouldn't it be nice to win down there? Because the champions' locker room was pretty cool.
I just want the green jacket. So I got Chief.
What do you think? How many sizes do you think they get that before the tournament? What if you're big fatso? They got one for you?
I think they got them all on standby.
Oh, God. Hey, real quick question before we get to Nancy and Jen. We had the VIX up 3.5 on Friday. Earth is down 1 today. What does that tell you, Greg? I mean, VIX is obviously going down from what it was Friday, but right now it's not going down the whole amount. What are you still nervous here?
If the VIX is going down, people are less nervous, meaning we're probably going to stay up.
I would think you're probably right on that. Hey, Nance, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing good. I understand you have uninvited guests.
No, they're invited, and your children are here.
Oh, God. How's my little dog, Maggie? Okay?
Her and Ella are kind of bonding underneath the table.
Oh, God.
Staying out of the way.
Have you been listening in? And interesting stuff this morning, huh? I don't know if you heard Dan Janitas on Thursday. John, I don't know if you did either. I think you probably did. But Dan was talking about the now they were elevated, probably more than most places. But he claims the retail prices in Florida are, didn't he say, John, they're down like 20% in some areas. People can't afford the insurance. They can't afford the increase in the guards and all the other stuff in the gated communities. And he said there's a massive bail. I don't think that's happening here. I won't say yet. It's not happening here yet. It's not happening here, Nance, is it? I mean, even though insurance and stuff is going up?
No, but I did read an article yesterday that said insurance, like Farmers pulled out, a lot of the companies are pulling out, and they said down there to insure home is, they said it's going to go up unbelievable, and they said, and it'll hurt everybody in America, like they said, within couple more years, like to insure your home up here is going to be like $2,500 to $3,000. So down there it'll be $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, something like that. That's going to hurt people, because the people that go down there, seriously, are the people who are, you know, a lot of these are minimum wage jobs. And then the second part, I think, is that the seniors that are down there, they, you know, who's going to be able to afford that for taxes?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know what, I guess, Nancy and Jan, I mean, you would never accuse me of being a somebody who, you know, sheds blood for an insurance company, because I think they pretty much know everything, and I can tell you stories about auto insurance and health insurance where I think they're outright crooks in a lot of ways, but I think they are absolutely stunned with the amount of pricing that has gone up in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, we had Lou was on Thursday talking about how he scraped the door of his car, and he paid for it himself, and he absolutely could not believe how much it cost, how long he had to wait to get the thing back. The loaner was whatever, and one of the listeners of the show emails me from Indiana. Some lady texting banged in his pickup truck. Well, not only was the repair bill astronomical, he thought they might total it, but they didn't. He was 12 weeks with a loaner.
Wow.
I mean, I am the new inflation gauge. I don't know if you heard us making fun of that one. It's the new, what they call it, the Slavichan or Greg. It's the super core, where they pull the actual housing prices out of the core. Is without food and energy, right? Like they take housing prices out of that. The idea is to get down to basic services and other stuff like auto insurance, car insurance, taxes, those kinds. And I don't even think taxes are in the CPI, but I could be wrong there. And they're saying that stuff is affecting people. I think these insurance companies are not only stunned by the amount of damage done by a couple of those hurricanes. When it comes to repair somebody's house, they're probably getting bills of like $150,000-$200,000 when a damn house is only worth $200 to start with. I mean, I think they're absolutely stunned by the cost to put this stuff back together.
That's correct. Well,
and even more than the cost, maybe, Nancy and Tom, I wonder if, you know, just the timing of this, because if you got somebody with a loan or car for 12 weeks, I mean, that's going on the insurance company's tab. If you got somebody in a motel room for 2 months because they can't find a roofer to finish the job on your house, that's on the insurance company's tab. So all of this, I mean, adjusting the claim is one thing, but the claims have, you know, sprouted into something very different.
Well, I mean, I've heard tale in your neck of the woods, Nance, of people $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for a roof. I'm like, gee, what do we put a roof on my parents' place? It was like $1,500. We're not even on the same. I mean, how much insurance do you have to pay every year for? I mean, the people in Florida are probably. I mean, if you're an insurance company and somebody's insurance goes from $2,500 to $6,000, and you say, "God, that's a real lot of dough," and you say, "Yeah, but I just put $150 back in your place. You got to pay me for how many years is that? You got to pay me for the next 25 years for me to break even."
A lot of the insurance companies are breaking Florida out and starting their own division just in Florida.
That's not new, though, is it?
I think it is for some, and then there's reinsurers on top of, let's say, like your Farmers, Geico, Allstate, State Farm. I mean, there's reinsurers on top of them. So when there's no disasters down there, those companies make, you know, decent money, but unfortunately, there's just been so much of it. The replacement cost is what's crazy. But that started a couple years ago when the lumber was just so expensive.
Yep.
So, you know, you're right. I mean, I happened to look at my policy last night, and I think it's 1.5 times higher than what my house is even worth to replace it. And then you got to remember, they're never going to replace the foundation.
No.
For the lot. So, I mean, God, this is crazy.
Well, I don't know how long ago this was, I used to do some, I'll say half-ass remodeling. It wasn't really half-ass, but I was always very mindful of what I could do, Nance. I wasn't about to take out a wall unless it was a closet, because I'm not a structural engineer. So I always looked for places that were kind of brick, and all the rooms were the right size. It's one nice. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be able to remodel a bathroom that's the right size. That I can do, but I sure as hell, I don't want to remodel one where I got to go through a bearing wall, you know, to make it bigger. It's above my pay grade. But I used to get kitchen cabinets, nice ones, for $100, $100 and a quarter a throw. Now what are they? $800, $1,000. I mean, I don't see how they could be up 8 or 10 times. I mean, it's been, if you were to look at the CPI from, you know, 35 years ago when I did this to today, it will tell you they should be up 2.25 times, not 10 times. But when the figures, though, Nance, now when you, if, say, John or I trundled over to Nancy to try and get a mortgage because we knew to go to the right person, and you are, I believe, and now we buy a house. John and I together buy a house, and we're going to pay, you know, $400,000 for the thing. Now we're going to have our mortgage, which is up to what? We over 7 again with the 10-year doing this?
They're probably in the high 6s, you know. So let's just pick 7.
Okay, so we put $80,000 down on the house, and now we're getting a mortgage for $320 at 7. The interest, the insurance and taxes used to be what percentage of that mortgage, and is it now getting to the spot where it's those two together are becoming almost the mortgage, or close to it? I mean, what are we doing in actual real numbers here?
Are you saying because they're at 7% instead of?
Well,
like
I'm saying the mortgage is going to be what? Let's say the mortgage is $2,500. Is the insurance now $500 and the tax is $800?
The insurance here is still to insure a house is probably maybe $1,200 a month. That's it. It's not, it hasn't gone crazy yet. But they're saying it is going to go crazy.
And the taxes are how much are they up in the last 10 years?
Oh, God, the taxes are nuts. I mean, just forget. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, people say that you have to get out of Cook County because the taxes are so high. They're actually low compared to the surrounding counties.
Yeah. What, Menard was saying that some of the southern suburbs that have beautiful, beautiful housing stacks like Flossmoor and places like that, that they've lost some of their, didn't they lose Lincoln Square? If you lose any of your commercial stuff, some of those places, isn't the taxes more than the mortgage? Or close?
That wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
Well, I know Country Club Hills is. I mean,
that's
they're really high. That's right in the area you're talking about, like in Matteson, where the took away Lincoln Mall.
Yeah, Olympia Fields, Flossmoor, that whole area. I mean, houses are gorgeous, and they're cheap, but your taxes, you go, wait a minute, right? Well, the city's getting like that. I mean, what do you think the full nut, even if, you know, you did something where what I would think maybe we could do it downtown, since you got hospitals and stuff here, make it, trying to attract some biotech companies, but every time you put a hospital or a university down here, you're taking city buildings out of the tax rolls, right, Jan?
Yeah.
I mean, how many places on State Street now are either dorms or colleges?
Well, a lot more than in the past, and that seems to be, a trend that may continue, because as these values decline, you will see other institutions that have some cash to throw around, they'll invest in them and turn them into,
Well, you wouldn't care if some huge biotech firm was across the street employing 3,000 people,
right?
But I don't see that yet, and hopefully someday maybe we might.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there really is a snowball effect, I think, with the tax revenue is going to continue to decline in downtown area.
Well, how do you anticipate this? A lot of this stuff, Nancers, people in my hood, people next door bought a place for, I don't know what they paid, million something something. They put $800,000 into it. I mean, some people, the people who either inherited this money or something, there's one group that's got. You ask it, they pull it out of their pocket. They don't care, and yet. It seems like an awful lot of rest of the people are they're looking at every nickel. There's no kind of middle here, is there?
Well, I think the middle class is definitely getting squeezed. Well, don't you, Jen? I mean,
oh, God, strangled. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the way of life right now.
If we
they say there's no inflation, but Jen, there is inflation. I mean, just everywhere you look around, everything you touch.
Well, it is. It's in the. It's in the services. It's the things you haven't talked about yet.
The service area. Yeah, I don't
know. I guess there's no reason for me to take time out of my busy day to go look at auto repair parts. Yet, if my truck breaks and I go in there and you say what? Matter of fact, I got a real quick story. Shouldn't be doing this, but I have my new truck to me. Has a little issue to when you stop near the very end, you feel the any like brakes going on right when it comes to a stop. So I take it to my guys, and my Arab guys were absolutely terrific. And I said, okay, what's wrong with these brakes? What's the deal? And he said, well, we were able to dig in. There's a bunch of codes for your analog brakes. And I said, okay, so what does that mean? He goes, well, we probably got to replace the module. We'll look around. We'll try and find you a used module. And I go, I'm not. Daddy Warbucks or anything, but I go, why don't I just get a new one? Oh, God, no, you don't want to do that. how bad could it be? He goes, try $3,500.
Oh, my God.
For an analog brake module? I said, how come the Suburban I just got rid of it, 250,000 miles on it, and I drove it through everything on earth? He goes, oh, the old model, the analog brake module was up underneath the hood where it was protected. They never went out. He goes, then some genius decided in the later models to put it underneath. Where the water and everything gets at it. He goes, they're $3,500. And I go, first of all, how could they possibly be their control module? I mean, what's in it, gold? He goes, we'll find you a really good used one for like $350. And I go, okay, go ahead. I mean, what would even possess me to think that there's a part on this truck that's $3,500, except maybe the motor.
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
I mean, what other little jewels are on this piece of crap? Pardon my French. I mean, what do we do? I mean, what did Dan say he paid for his transmission, Jen? $25,000 and his Mercedes?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I mean, people don't even realize you got these bombs laying around, do you? I mean, and I think that's what these guys are trying to get at with this double core inflation. It's like services that you don't even know you need. I mean, what if you go to court and have to start paying an attorney $600 an hour? Or something like that. I mean, so Nance, give us the full review of what's going on. Are you doing the business picking up at all, or anybody doing a refi?
I think it is. People are interested in selling, and I mean buying, and they're looking, and you're starting, which is better than what it's been in the past year. So that's a good thing, and I think you're going to start to see it come back, but you're not going to see the wealth that we had in the 90s. I mean, that's gone. And then we had another surge, in the early 2000s, but that's gone. And now it's going to be slow. It's going to be a building thing,
Is part of the push toward people buying homes again the fact that the rentals are so high?
No. I can't say that it is. I'd say that it's people who are looking to, really are just tired of waiting for everything to come down, and they're ready to go. Like a man called me the other day and said, my wife said rates are coming down, and he wants to build. And I said, rates are not coming down. I mean, if you're going to build $1 million home, you can just realize you're going to pay a higher rate. It's not going to, you're not going to get, what do you want the rate to be if you're at 3?
Yeah, I mean, you want it to be 3, but that's not happening.
Right. So, I mean, it just forget all that. And plus, you're talking about not even finishing or completing until a year from now.
What if I were to, I'd be actually looking for pieces of property for a few people, where people actually want to do building themselves. So, let's say I add myself to that list, and of course I'm going to use the Audrey Nancy combo because you guys are the best. By the way, don't leave today without giving us a shameless plug and a phone number. If I decide I want to go buy a piece of property and it costs me whatever, Audrey finds me a nice place for, what would it cost me, $250, something like that, for a nice piece of property, and I plunk down the $250, that'd be nice, wouldn't it, Jen? Here's $250. Yeah. Now I've got $750 left, but I don't have that in cash. Can I get a builder? What happens now, Nance? What do I do?
Well, you have to find a builder.
I mean, I'm talking about money-wise.
Money-wise, you're going to have to get a construction loan.
Are they available?
Yeah, if you go to a bank, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, but so you're not involved at that level. You're involved.
No, because so like the man that I talked to the other day, he has the builder owns the lot, and the builder is going to build. Okay, he can't even pick a lot. This is how crazy it is. He can't even pick a lot until late August because the guy's just too busy. Okay, and then he wants to pay cash for a pool, and he wants to put the pool in the backyard first.
First.
And I said, first, because he doesn't want all that mess after he's built his nice new home.
And yeah, I said, how do you build a home walking around a pool?
Well, I said, I was figuring that's going to be in the back, and then the home will be in the, further up in the front. But that's not even going to work because he doesn't own the lot. The builder does. And that concept seemed foreign to him. Now, in your scenario where you own the lot, and let's say you wanted to put the pool in first, you still don't have like the sewer and the water and all that hooked up, so I don't know how you can do that. And then you're going to move all that earth around?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like there's reasons why I put them in last for a reason. I'm just saying. All right, so you send me to a bank that says, okay, go to these guys because they've done it before and I know people have got them there. So I go to some bank out near Palos or whatever.
Bank.
Okay, so I go there. And I show them my assets and the other stuff and my other, well, hopefully I got enough to where they'll plunk me down the 750. Now what, I get some kind of a contract with the builder, I give them a little up front, a little bit this, a little that, and it, as it progresses along, I give him some progress payments so he doesn't have to finance it. Then when it's all over, he's done. Then I go get the mortgage and you pay off the bank construction loan, correct?
Correct. Or maybe the builder is going to finance it, and it's just part of the cost of the home.
Okay.
That's possible.
The most of the time, does a builder eat all the interest costs along the way, or do I give them progress payments? I ask this because we did railroad contracts. We always gave progress payments.
That's between you and the builder. It, usually they ask for, so much money down and so much when it's under roof, just so that you've got skin in the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, John, you ready? Where are we going to go?
Oh, well, I'm curious about, Nancy. Do you have much variety in the kind of mortgage products that you can market to people? I mean, there used to be things I remember with the old savings and loans where they, if you bought a house in a certain geographic area or if you worked for a university and they wanted you to live close to campus, they could provide you mortgage money on attractive rates. Are there different mortgage products now that target areas or types of building or types of borrowers that you see, people competing for?
John, there are so many different types of mortgage products. It's unbelievable. And this is where, for me, I've got over, 25 years of experience in this. So it's highly important. I get all the really difficult things, especially on referrals, from lawyers and stuff like that, where there's, there's all these obstacles that have to be met. So there's all kinds of different products. I have something, two properties up in Michigan I'm financing, and it's just it's been an absolute nightmare.
And all different kinds of underwriting standards, too, I assume.
Oh, my God, yeah. So Fannie and Freddie are, the ones that buy the loans, and those are the government agencies. And then on top of that, the servicer has their own overlays. So maybe you don't like what, Chase has as an overlay, but what Harris has as an overlay can fit into your thing. So you have to, as a salesperson, in order to help my customer, I have to read up and search what's the best product for them to put them in. And, if you have vanilla loan, you don't need to do all that. But if you have any kind of glitch or something in the way, that's really where we really do a great job for people, because we have access to probably 50 places, mortgage servicers, and then we can always go to Fannie and Freddie direct.
You do any stuff with VA and the rest of those guys, or
Do VA and FHA.
What
with this new thing with the realtors, where you're going to pay a realtor to sell your home, and then you're going to pay for a realtor to buy your home. There's some kind of thing coming up where they're going to split, where the customer gets to pick whether or not they want a real estate person that sells their home and a real estate person that buys your home. They feel it's unfair that the real estate person represents both sides, and they don't represent both sides. I mean, you could do this now.
If you represent both sides, the first thing you have to do is tell them.
Right. Well, they've got a thing now where this is going to change, supposedly, in June or something like that. And what's wrong is if the seller... So usually the seller pays both sides. They pay both realtors, right? And they're saying, no, that the buyer has to pay for the realtor, and that way they'll have their best interest at heart.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but the people... Do these legislatures have any concept of economics? They are paying both sides. The buyer is paying half because it's coming off the price of the house, right?
I agree, but that's for some reason now that's been found unlawful, or God only knows what. But what they've done now is FHA and VA. VA, you can buy a home at 100% financing. So now you're making the person come up with their down payment and what? on a $100,000 house, they got to come up with another $2,500 to pay the real estate agent. They don't have that kind of money, or they would be putting money down to begin with. So FHA and VA right now, it's going to get very complicated for these people, because the reason they have 3% down or nothing down is to allow the borrowers who don't have money saved to still get in a home and not pay these rents, the cost of the rent, which is actually getting as high or more expensive than your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment.
Well, it's
so I don't understand what they've done. They've really made it worse, not better. They made it worse.
Do you think that they have any idea what they've done, just like in sports, NIL, Supreme Court decision?
No. Because if they realize what they've done, the American way is that everybody should own their own home. That's the American dream, and now they just wrecked it for the people who don't have the down payment.
Well,
I mean, they're scraping together to get the 3% as it is. Now they got to pay a realtor, and they never had to worry about that before.
Well, I think it's the. I guess we can roll over a minute or two, but maybe we'll talk about this next week or next time you're on, because we're going to have a conversation with you than Aud, because she's part of it. Not part of the bad part, but she's probably a little more comfortable talking about it. This whole idea of we don't want to have to pay somebody 6% no matter what. Now, maybe the Coldwell Bankers in the world were still insisting on that. I haven't heard of a realtor, and I'm not talking about Aud. It's been part of a 6% thing in forever. They're all negotiated.
Even if the number were 4%, okay, you still have the right as the seller to say, I'm not giving that much commission. I'm only going to pay you 3%. I mean, at any point in time, you could say, I'm not doing that, and you either sell it for 2% or you don't.
Or you can list it yourself.
Right.
You pay somebody. If you called Audrey up and said, I'm not talking for her, but if you called her up and say, here's $500, put me in the listing thing, she'd do it. I'm saying there's realtors that would do it. But you're never going to call me, you never know anything. All you're going to do is list it for you. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, there's a price along the way, but now they're talking about a buyer's agent. The buyer doesn't want to pay their share. Okay, fine. Well, if I'm going to show you houses, I'll be like an attorney. It's $150 an hour and 40 cents a mile.
Or they can just say, that's going to be the last house they show you for the day.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, right? If you're going to make money showing house 1 through 5 and then 6, you're not going to make anything. You're going to show it to them, but it's going to be last on the list.
How many people even know we got a dash on this one? Jen, I'll give you one question after this, but how many people even know that when you list your house, the agent is usually the person that pays for all the pictures? If there's a drone coming by, they're going to pay for the drone. They're going to present the place. And, oh, by the way, they're going to pay for all the advertising. Don't you think that any realtor, rather than making their 2.5%, which is part of 2, whatever it is, would much rather say, okay, give me $1,000 up front for all the pictures and all that stuff, so I have no money out of pocket. How big of an advertising thing do you want? Oh, you want this much? Okay, that's another grand. And okay, I'll take 1%. They'll do that in a second, I think, with no money up ever out of pocket. Some place where somebody lists it too high. If you want me to show up for an open house, it's $400 an hour. Every real estate person would jump on that in a second, I think, Nance.
Right.
Now, is that what they want? Most people would rather, I don't know what most people want, but at least you have some.
Well, they feel it's unfair.
Go ahead, John.
If you could see that it was going to be a fairly clean deal, that you had a good relationship with your client, and there was no title problems or hassles with anything that would complicate it or waste your time, you would look for those kinds of deals, and you could do okay. But I think it's going to change the dynamic of selling properties where there's any kind of challenge to them too, because people are going to say at some point, this is a losing proposition, unless I get X number of dollars, and that's going to raise some eyebrows.
But Why am I paying to have this headache?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, Nance, what if you were to say, you were odd, I promise we're going to dash here, if Audrey or you has to call the surveyor and say, hey, get your butt in gear, we need that for the close. That's an attorney making that call. It's $150, right?
Yep.
Well,
nobody wants to pay that. Now it's all included in this fee. Everybody says it's all of a sudden way too high. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Right.
Well,
that's it. Just it. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But they're just oversimplifying the thing. And the problem with this is they could have, if that's the way you want to sell your house, you can do it.
Sure you can.
We didn't need a law to tell us that.
Right.
Anyway, Nance, thank you. Thank you, John. Well, we had enough stuff.
Thanks, Nance.
See, we had real estate. We had wars. We had markets. We had a lot of stuff to talk about today. Good job. Yeah, good job, Greg. SP Futures up 42. NASDAQ Futures up 159. We're trying to make back Friday. So far, we're made back a little more than half. We'll see if we stay there. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.